Hello and welcome to the State of Energy. I'm Rand DeWitt, along with a man that puts mistletoe in his back pocket so people can kiss his butt. Tom Clark, Executive Director with Rocky Mountain Propane Association.
Oh, wow.
Christmas is upon us.
That was a good one. Christmas is upon us.
It is.
How was your trip to Hawaii?
You know what? It was very special. And thank you very much to everyone that was involved. It was Holidays for Lahaina. We provided 500 meals for people that were displaced by the fires. It was a little over 250 for people that actually got the turkey dinners, like 18 to 20 pound turkeys, all the fixings. It was perfect. And then the other folks, for whatever reason, because there's not a lot of places to stay, some of them are still in hotel rooms, so they couldn't cook. So we provided them the opportunity on Thanksgiving to go into a couple of the restaurants near them and get full Thanksgiving dinners. And it was very special. And it's amazing because they've got Lahaina closed down, like Lahaina town. It's like Cold War era military checkpoints. Nobody's going in. And they've got a lot still going on there, but there's a place on the top side, the gateway, where you have to drive in, and they've got like 8 to 10 foot barriers up, the green barriers, trying to protect the area so it's not completely visible, but it's hard to hide. And it literally looks like what a movie set would look like after a nuclear blast. It's just devastating.
Wow. And, well, I'm glad you were able to go out there and support those families. So that was good. Good on you.
Yeah, and they're going to roll it into the to Christmas, so it's holidaysforlahaina.com.
Nice.
Yeah. And what about you? How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, we got the whole family over for the first time in many years because I got, you know, family from all over the country. So it was really good. Yeah, we had a great time. We celebrated my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. We had a little surprise party for them. It was a great time.
Because I recently played golf with your parents. Did they get married when they were 8?
I said this to the group. I said, I think my mother has got to be the youngest woman in Utah that's been married for 50 years.
Yes.
Because now it's illegal.
Okay, and you can find out more about the State of Energy, how propane can improve your life, and actually do a lot for your wallet as well by going to thestateofenergy.com. That is thestateofenergy.com. We're also on Instagram at the State of Energy. And with Christmas season upon us, we want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to all. If you're one of those people who gets offended when someone says Merry Christmas to you, then I'd like to say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. What do you know, we got some cool gift ideas for Christmas.
Yeah, these things are awesome. The stuff you sent over there, I saw that Milwaukee M18, 18 volt lithium ion cordless force air propane portable heater from Home Depot.
Milwaukee Tools has got to be like the biggest name. And I mean, everybody loves their Milwaukee stuff.
Yeah.
And now they've got this cool propane, like a little shop heater, portable heater. That thing's awesome. And it's not that expensive.
Yeah, it's only over a couple of hundred, a little over $200. And it's got 30,000 to 70,000 BTUs.
Cool little device. If you're looking for something to get, somebody that's loves propane as much as we do, that's a nice one.
Yeah.
The other one is, if you get a little bit more expensive, you get into this cool grill from Lifetime Products, such as like a smoker and a propane powered grill at the same time. Pretty awesome little thing. My sister actually has one, and I got to see that in action over Thanksgiving. That thing's pretty sweet.
The Traeger Flat Rock.
The
Lifetime smoker.
The
grill combo.
The grill combo from Lifetime. Yeah, and she actually smoked a turkey on that, and it was pretty good. It was a cool grill.
Yeah, you can do burgers on it, or you can do brisket. Like you said, you can do smoking. You can do it both at the same time. It's very awesome. Yeah, it's a little over $1,000, but I mean, you can monitor it and adjust the temperature on an app or through Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. I mean, it's really high tech and provides some really awesome food. So
and the last product that you talked about, this Traeger group. Traeger has always been like the carcinogen people, right? They were like throwing wood chips into your food and you were eating. It's like almost as bad as charcoal. But now I think they've seen the light and they're making this propane powered griddle. And it's, they must be selling the crap out of them because on their website, they're sold out.
They're sold out of those, but all of the wood chip ones, there's plenty of those available.
You can get the Traeger propane powered griddle at the Home Depot.
Yes, you can. Yeah, it's what I think the one's running around 900. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece of artwork. It's art. I would say it's artwork the way they designed this thing.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, I like it. It's if my wife's listening, I'll take one of those. I'll take all three of these.
Well, because you already have your Mopeka tank sensor.
That's right. How can we not? I mean, now if you're looking for something super affordable to give away for Christmas, the Mopeka tank sensor fits right on the bottom of your propane tank, and you'll always know how much propane is in your grill tank so you don't run out.
It's super easy. It's only about $50, and it's just a little magnet to snap it on there, and it gives it down. I mean, the information it provides is awesome because it can work for your home or your RV on the grills, or it can go up to like a 90,000-gallon industrial tank, and it gets it right down to fractions and fractions and fractions of pounds.
Yeah, where do they find those at?
Mopeka.com, M-O-P-E-K-A.com. It's Mopeka, accuracy above everything. And with that slogan, we need to bring in our guest, Colin Sorais. Welcome to the State of Energy. How are you?
I am doing very well, and I hate to do it, but I got to correct you. It's Colin Sorais. Sorry,
Sorais.
And I should have done.
I'm sorry.
I should have done the pronunciation first, because it. But it's Sorais. Great because it gets everybody. As a matter of fact, when I was 6 years old, and I don't know how I understood these terms, but I knew what they were, someone called me Colin Sewers, which is about the worst way you could have pronounced my name. And that one has stuck with me for 35 years. So
we need to make t-shirts that say that very thing.
Yes.
That would be kind of fun. No?
Sorais,
yeah.
Sewer.
Yeah.
Colin Sorais, President and CEO of the Western Propane Gas Association. We are very grateful that you're joining us here on the State of Energy. You've got a lot of experience. You're doing a lot of, you're very diverse history that you have. You've been involved with government affairs. You've worked with the governor of California, members of the legislature, members of Congress. I think you also worked with Barnum and Bailey's as a swing person. I can't remember what that was. But.
No, I was one of the dirty carnies working behind the scenes covered in horse excrement. But I like to tell people I was on the trapeze. It sounds a lot better on a resume.
And you also went to UC Berkeley. I'm sure you've got great stories from there.
I do. Interesting community. Not sure I'd ever go back, but Berkeley was one of those times where people said, oh my God, how on earth could you be there? You know, is an evil Republican around all those weird Berkeley types. And I said, yeah, but the weird Berkeley types, like the person muttering to himself, walking around on the street corner, or the person ranting and raving with a picket or with a signpost on a street corner. I'm like, at least I know they're crazy. It's when I get into a HOA meeting with somebody who all of a sudden starts speaking nonsense, you know, about 5G. I go, oh God, why can't you people just hold up signs so I can see you from a distance? It was so much simpler.
Yes, I can very much understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah.
And you also do some great work with the Sacramento Children's Home.
Yeah. So it's, I'm currently serving as treasurer of the Sacramento Children's Home. It's the largest children's foster youth, respite care, at-risk youth program in pretty much all of Northern California. We service 9 or 10 counties surrounding Sacramento. It's the kind of thing where I was giving to them frequently before I ever joined the board. So when I got asked to help out, I was like, well, you know, it's the only amount of time I have is personal and professional. If I'm going to spend my personal time not with my family, I'm going to make darn well sure it's something I want to be doing.
That's really great. That's very great. Very cool. Well, it sounds like California is in dire need of your guidance.
And this is why I asked Colin. I met up with Colin last week. We were in DC together, and I was like, we were talking about this budget deficit. And I thought, man, we really got to talk about this on our podcast or on our show so we can tell these other states, you know, everybody is so worried about all the Californians moving into their other state and bringing those ideas with them.
Mm-hmm.
And now California is faced with this huge budget deficit. And I was like, man, you gotta help us. You gotta help us understand this. And Colin, you know a lot about this. So what in the heck is going on in California?
Yeah, it's
what'd you do with the money? Where's the money?
Look,
well, all the rich people are leaving, and California relies so much on those high earners to pay for everything.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head, and again, part of my 15,000 years of service and different jobs, I've specialized at multiple points in my career, and I've actually worked on the state budget quite extensively. But, you know, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. The single biggest problem is California's tax structure is not at all stable. We are heavily dependent on upper income earners, on capital gains. We create a lot of programmatic funds that are taxed on, like, say, very high income earners, households making over $1 million. So if the stock market starts hurting, we start hurting. But the problem we had in California is there's a couple things that happened within the last half decade that have really brought all of those chickens in terms of our taxes home to roost. The first is the SALT deductions. When the Trump administration and Congress rolled back the state and local tax deductions that high tax states like California and New York were taking advantage of, it made a lot of people who live in California and those other states have true accountings of what they're paying to the government. And so the first is folks started saying, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money, which, you know, to your point, was one of those exodus moments for a lot of middle-class families. But the second was inflation. When inflation started getting higher and cash started being a bit more expensive, investments pull back. Well, what happens with investments? Well, where is most of that funny money going? It's going into private equity, into tech, into new industries. A lot of those are housed here in California. So when the funny money spigot turned off, what happened? You started to seeing these multi-million dollar industries, multi-billion dollar industries and companies start having to go through massive layoffs because they weren't generating revenue. They were basically using that funny money to help paper over their revenue. So it's not just, you know, the market itself is kind of getting wobbly and affecting those higher income earners, including upper middle class families. But you're also getting a lot of these folks who are in those upper brackets getting laid off and getting displaced, having to move elsewhere. And so it was a 1-2 punch. And so now California, just this fiscal year, is facing a budget deficit of $68 billion with a B dollars.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the surplus was astronomical just a couple of years ago.
Yep.
Yeah, a year ago.
Yeah, it's surplus. So the surplus during the COVID years was, again, funny money.
Right.
But we've had, under the previous governor, Jerry Brown, who had a lot of people remember as Moonbeam from his efforts in the 1970s. But he came back when his second go around as governor is he took fiscal responsibility very seriously. And so there was no giveaways, a lot of very tight budgets. It was immediately after the Great Recession. And so he was very, very, very reticent to create new programmatic spending, to put more money out the door. Gavin Newsom comes along in 2019, and he's sitting on these piles of cash like Smaug and decides to go, well, I just got here. I've got higher aspirations. There's a relatively newer legislature because we've got term limits, so we get pretty regular turnover. I want to start making my mark. What are we going to do?
He's like, and you get $5 million, and you get $5 million, and you get $5 million.
My question is, obviously you're going to start cutting things. And my question is the clean energy spending, because they spend a ton of money on clean energy initiatives, are those going to get cut, or do you cut other things? When it comes down to cutting something out of the budget, what is going to be the priority?
You know, we've already kind of seen that. So by the way, this $68 billion shortfall, we didn't know how bad it was going to be until we finally got the returns from October with the pushback IRS date. So we passed our state budget back in June. And back then we thought it was only going to be a $15 billion shortfall. Mm-hmm. So some of those cuts have already been made. And to your point, Tom, it's the correct one. There's a political calculation that goes into it. Do you want to cut children's services, essential services? Do you want to cut education? No, you're going to go look for the stuff that is not meat and potatoes, you know, core middle-class family stuff. And for that, it's those incentives, spending $150,000 per electric bus for school districts, spending $10,000, $15,000 for a battery electric class one, two, or three light duty vehicle. So what we saw was there was already, with that minor, in comparison, $15 billion shortfall, we saw, you know, 2 and 3 year outlays of budgets from budgets passed in terms of planned spending get rolled back by the billions. And it was mostly in incentives, grants, and rebates for a lot of these transition technologies, these EV technologies, because frankly, that was the easiest thing to cut with the smallest constituency, who is also tends to be the most well-heeled and can afford it.
That sounds like a really bad deal for people that went all in, you know, a school district or something that's all in on this. And now all of a sudden they get cut, the subsidies get cut. How do you afford a $400,000 school bus when the subsidies get cut? They can't. I don't think they can.
And you're talking about school districts in California for all this money we have. And it, again, you're talking about a budget of $222 some odd billion plus. You think, well, my gosh, 40 some odd million people in California, 200 plus billion in a budget. It must be raining dollars over there. But the reality is there are so many mouths to feed that education tends to get shortchanged. And you're talking about education, transportation infrastructure. Forget it. That's not classroom instruction. That's not going to our teacher unions, to our administrators, to programming in classrooms. So in education, transportation is absolutely the last mouth that gets fed. And so when you talk about education already getting shortchanged, you know, I won't violate the, I won't call them out, but I talk to a lot of fleet operators and municipal governments and school districts. And I had a fleet operator from suburban California say, my school district, my elected board said, we're buying 7 new battery electric trucks. Well, we only paid for the first 2 with those subsidies. But I have a procurement contract with this particular battery electric truck manufacturer who may or may not have a manufacturing facility in the California high desert to buy. You do the math. But we have a procurement agreement to buy 5 more. I don't have the money for it. And so you've got a lot of, there's a lot of local government fleet managers that talk to me. They go,
there's no money now.
I don't know how to tell my elected officials, many of whom have aspirations of higher public office and voted for this stuff in part because it looks really nice on a campaign mailer.
Yeah.
That we don't have the money to pay for this.
I think the story here, though, has got to be like, we got to share this with these other states that say, look, man, be careful when you go looking for a clean energy school bus. If you're banking on subsidies to be there forever, they can turn off just as quickly as they turned on.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's, you know, the mouth the feed argument works as well across not just local governments and school districts, but it's also amongst the companies themselves. We've seen light duty auto manufacturers rolling back their own battery electric light duty estimates, things they publicly said at dioceses next to, you know, Governor Newsom or President Biden saying, we're going to produce this many. They're quietly rolling those figures back because the cost of acquiring the rare earth minerals to make those batteries is so expensive that they can't produce for that market competitively. And so if you think about that, you're going, well, that's not even on the end user side. That's the manufacturer saying, I can't make this pencil. If a large scale Fortune 50 manufacturer cannot make the economics of this work, how on earth can a smaller or a rural school district, which is working with very tight margins, afford to go out there and get something? I do know a lot of school districts love doing this. They buy one electric bus, they use it for the shortest route they have, and then they invest everything else in propane or natural gas just because it's more cost effective. But they don't tell anybody about it. And they let our industry have to be the one to sell that message because they're trying to make themselves look good to the public. And, you know, who can blame them? They've got to get, you know, board members got to get reelected too.
The other craziest part about this whole thing about these electric buses, when you have an option like a propane bus, which is cheaper, cleaner, California has this assumption, or people have an assumption, that California's electricity is super clean. When over 30% of your electricity is imported from other states that's making this electricity for them out of coal.
And by the way, your folks up in Utah and Colorado and Wyoming and the Dakotas absolutely love selling us the highest margin electricity that they have on their books. What's that? LA? Solar's out. You need to buy some power. Well, I'll sell it to you on the spot market for, oh, say double what I paid for at wholesale. Does that sound good? Yeah, sell it to me.
Give a low, low price of double. Yeah.
But it's, well, so that's the dirty secret of California. And dirty, I'm using that pun literally and generously, because our average grid emissions based upon primary procurement is 50% renewable, quote unquote. But when you get into practice, we are double procuring energy, because if you're procuring an intermittent energy source, your demand doesn't go away. Your demand is there. So you got to buy on the spot market from out of state. And when the only thing's running when the sun is set or the power demand is high is base load like coal or natural gas, you're going to buy it. Because the last time a governor in the state of California got recalled and removed from office before his terms ended, and I went to go work for the person who followed him, Arnold Schwarzenegger, was Governor Gray Davis, and it was because he couldn't keep the lights on. So when you're talking about something that Californians care deeply about without explicitly ever saying into the top of a, you know, push poll or some national media, it's energy. They don't care about it, though, until it's not there. And every elected official in the state of California knows that lesson, which is why we pay through the nose for electricity generated in neighboring Western states, buy it at the spot market for usury prices, because if we don't and the lights go out, it's lights out for the elected officials.
And then those other states get the black eye for making that electricity for you using coal.
And, oh, come on, Tom. We're Californians. We love talking out of both sides of our mouth.
And other parts too.
The story here has to be, though, like we can't follow this model because it doesn't work. It's not cost effective and it's not clean. And if you really wanted to make a difference in transportation, there's other alternatives. We already have the infrastructure, the vehicles to tackle the school bus problem. It's already there.
You know what's great, Tom? And that's such a good point. Right now, it doesn't get talked about in the press, but California's got this thing called the Low Carbon Fuel Standard. It's one of our market programs that we're doing that basically says if you generate over a certain amount of carbon and the carbon intensity of a certain fuel, you got to pay a few cents or, you know, more. But if you've got a renewable fuel or something that's below a certain carbon intensity, you get a credit. You know, it's a general market. But as part of that rulemaking, the state of California, working with the national government, had to basically say, how much does electricity emit in greenhouse gases for transportation sector? In California, the carbon intensity of electricity for the transportation segment is 80.75. You know what fossil propane is in California? 81. So right now, even in California, the state of California, the California Air Resources Board, by their own calculation, fossil propane has the same carbon intensity as electricity used in transportation. The second you start putting any blend of renewable propane out there, you're well below the carbon intensity. And it's unfortunate that we have to have that conversation behind the scenes, because that's not what gets stated to the public or to people who are going out there trying to procure. they're told you got to buy this because you got to buy it. But if you actually genuinely care about the environment and reducing greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane, shifting to propane is not only cost effective, it's the single best transition you can make that's off the shelf ready today to improve the climate.
Well, it's California. Why would we do something like that?
No.
It makes too much sense.
Why go and try and use science and logic when I can rely on my unsubstantiated feelings and set that as the Northern Star for public policy?
Quote unquote, follow the science. That worked out well.
I'll just throw one more in there. Not only that, we also have a ton of propane available. We have 3 times what we consume available. Where's the rest go? It gets shipped over to other countries. So not only do we have the infrastructure, we have the gas, we have the equipment to use it, we have plenty of product to sell. We just need to get out there and sell it.
It goes so much further than that, Tom. I mean, you know, California, we got a lot of people who like to talk about social justice and human rights. Right now, the vast, vast majority of the world's rare earth minerals necessary to make the all-electric transition happen are controlled by the Chinese government, using coal-fired energy to refine it, using slave labor, Uyghur Muslims, displaced populations in the interior country to do the mining. And when it's not there, it's places like the southern, southern Congo and parts in the sub-Saharan, where they have children doing open pit mining as young as 12, 13 years old.
It's wrong.
Barefoot, so probably.
Wrong. I mean, you talk about that, and then you talk about a domestic fuel that is low carbon, that we have an ample supply that can make a rapid transition. It, you know, every time I see someone protesting human rights and justices, I go, well, what kind of car do you drive? Because you may be contributing to the problem rather than helping to alleviate it.
Colin Suarez, thank you very much for joining us on the State of Energy, President and CEO of the Western Propane Gas Association. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, westernpga.org, or they can email me, which is Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at westernpga.org.
Thank you very much for joining us, Colin. You're a really great guy.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
This was awesome.
That is Tom Clark, Executive Director with Rocky Mountain Propane Association. My name is Rand DeWitt, and we are always online at thestateofenergy.com.